Los Angeles. You're now tuned into Slauson Girl Speaks
with award-winning journalist and South Central native, Slauson Girl.
This is a safe space.
Yeah!
Celebrating authentic black expression.
Where Slauson Girl dives deep
into Los Angeles history,
politics, and news.
While discussing culture, race, and identity with carefully curated guests
to keep you open-minded in today's society.
No cap.
Follow Slauson Girl on all social media platforms and stream Slauson Girl Speaks on Apple Podcasts and Spotify.
You don't want to miss this.
Welcome to Slauson Girl Speaks. I'm your host, Slauson Girl, bringing you world news with a South Central state of mind. Randy Savvy is a Compton native with a love for cowboy hats and horses. But don't be mistaken, the hood gave him his attitude. In 2017, he launched Compton Cowboys to continue his family's legacy of offering horseback riding to at-risk youth. Now, he is working out of a studio located at the Horse Ranch in Compton and is crafting a music style of his own, incorporating the street style of Compton within his cowboy background and experiences. He caught the attention of Compton native Dr. Dre, who produced Randy's debut single Colorblind, released in 2020. Randy is here to talk with us today about his recently released EP, Late Night Ride, as well as his upcoming debut album, Cowboys and Gangstas. Randy, how are you today?
I am doing great. I'm here. I'm alive. I'm prayed up. I'm with Slauson Girl. We on the vibes. You know what I'm saying? We in Compton. I can't ask for nothing more. You know what I'm saying? I'm blessed. I'm fortunate. My kids healthy. My people solid. You know, and I'm working. So I'm real good. Thank you.
Definitely. Thank you for coming through. I really appreciate your time. So let's kind of talk about your most recent music. The people know you from Compton Cowboys, but you recently released an EP, Late Night Ride. And how would you describe your style of music?
I love the music. I grew up listening to a lot of country music and a lot of hip hop music. And I grew up in the 90s, at which point, like, both of those genres were, like, really coming into their own. Traditional country music, stuff that you would hear at the rodeos, and just all the stuff you would see hearing or seeing westerns or on commercials. Like, it's just, I loved it. I just grew up listening to that because, you know, the cowboy thing, when I was going to rodeos or any kind of events, like, that was the music we would listen to. And my aunt was the one that was really big on listening to the country music. And a few of my favorite songs to this day are country songs. And a few of my favorite country musicians and songwriters are some of my favorites. People like Alan Jackson, you know, and all those kind of dudes. And then on the hip-hop side, like, he grew up in the projects in Harvard City, and then he went all the way to, like, a Harvard MBA.
MBA?
A Harvard MBA.
Oh, shouts out to your pops.
My pop, shout out to the pops. He's a Harvard dude, but he's from the streets, though. So, like, his favorite music, like, his favorite artist is Too Short. So you got to think, like, 90s Too Short was, like, ratchet Too Short.
Like. right.
So I used to be with him as a kid, and he used to just be, like, with his, you know, collar vibe, suit and tie vibe. But, like, you know, we driving over to the west side, Westwood or whatever, to work at UCLA or whatever. But on the way there, we bumping, like, Ghetto Ass Too Short. Like, talking crazy. I'm in the backseat. And, like, some of that was almost, like, my fondest memories as a kid. And so I grew up listening to country music and hip-hop music mostly. And in addition to a lot of the other stuff, like smooth jazz and, you know, soul. Obviously, all of our parents listened to that. But those were my main two genres of music. So as I developed my own passion for music, and when I decided to take it serious in 2009 as a freshman in college, which I always had a passion for, but I decided to take it serious then, I just started doing music, trying to make beats, trying to do this and that. And fast forward to 2017 when we started Compton Cowboys, that really brought me home brought me back to my roots as a kid, brought me back to my lifestyle and the way I grew up. And I was like, man, if I'm gonna make music, I might as well make the music that I know and what's comfortable to me and what feels fresh and fun and something that will be different. And so I'm like, dang, let's just make hood cowboy music. Like, what does that sound like? And I just started playing around with it. And so that's what I've been able to accomplish with my EP. And I'm super excited about it because it really does that. When you listen to it, you can tell like, wait, is this trap, hood, country? What is this? You know, and that's exactly what I was trying to accomplish. So I'm having a lot of fun with it.
Nice. So Colorblind is your first single off the EP. And the opening shot shows you riding a horse through Compton as you talk about the ills of the community and how they affect you personally. When did you come up with the concept of this song?
The Colorblind song has an interesting story because once I got into my mode, when I feel like I started to actually find the sound, which was like 2019, when I really started finding the sound that I was going for. Mm-hmm. I just started recording a bunch of songs, and I had a friend who had just lost her boyfriend to gang violence, randomly too. You know how it be. Like, he just went to the store and got killed. And that was very tragic. And I remember just sitting with her, and she was just talking about how much that hurt her. And I was just thinking, like, her story is all too regular. Like,
right.
The fact that I could totally identify with her, to me, was like tragic. And the fact that anybody you talk to in the hood could identify with that situation is tragic. So usually when I go to do songs, I'm always inspired by something. And I went into writing Colorblind with that in mind, just thinking about gang violence. You know, the song was actually originally about just gang violence, us killing each other. So it was like red light, blue light, yellow tape, black face, white chalk on the ground, a murder scene.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we in the streets killing each other, and I'm tired of seeing these murder scenes. I'm tired of seeing all these different colors that really are traumatizing me, you know? And so that was the original concept of the song. I had wrote the song, recorded the song, and I had the song. And so fast forward to 2020 summer, George Floyd gets killed and all these different things. And I had all these songs in my catalog because I've been working on my album and stuff. And I was like, man, I heard Meek Mill's song, Other Side of America, about him just going at, like, you know how Meek gonna come, he gonna come crazy. But I love when he's saying, like, coming at the real stuff. Like, mm-hmm. I love when he's talking real shit about the powers that be and the ills, you know.
Right.
So I was like, man, I need something like that. I wanna do something like that. So I was like, wait, do I have anything like that? And I went back to my catalog. And when I listened to Colorblind in the context of, like, George Floyd and police brutality and violence and all that,
mm-hmm.
I was like, man, this is crazy because the lyrics still are relevant to that, because now this murder scene is not because some gang members killed each other. The police created this murder scene. Like, they killed somebody on the scene. So now this red light, blue light, is now we traumatized by the police killing us. So it would just totally just hit me like, oh, man, that's the joint. Like, this is the song. So by then, I had just started developing a relationship with Dre through Compton Cowboys and just through being connected through the city. And it just hit me like, bro, you got to call Dre. Like, tell him this is what you want to do. By that time, I hadn't put a song out yet, like, officially as Randy Savvy, as an artist. I was still trying to develop my music, find the sound. And I just called Dre like, bro, like, this is the song I want to do. This is how I want to do it. Like, no questions about it. He was like, all right, for sure, bring it to me. So we brought it to the studio. He brought me up to his studio at his crib. He produced it up. He put the Dre touch on it. And, you know, he brought all that extra, like, music and stuff that you hear. On the EP, you hear the acoustic stripped-down performed version of the song.
Right.
The single that is out is Dr. Dre's record version, produced-up record version. So it has all this incredible, like, soul element to it. It's a very musical experience.
Right.
And he did that. And, you know, he's just an incredible, you know, musician and just an artistic talent and just a visionary and all that. So he totally accomplished what I was trying to accomplish with the song. Like, he elevated that. And then the video was intended to complement the song, complement that. So I wanted to show visuals of Black Lives Matter movements, visuals of the streets, visuals of what my perspective is in the hood. And it all worked. So that's where we at. And after I put the single out, I'm like, well, I'm off and running now. I got to keep it going. Now I got to throw some stuff together. So I've been recording for years, you know, so I probably have a few dozen songs that are in this like black cowboy sound that I'm curating. And so now I'm just like putting collections together and start dropping it. So I got my EP out now, Late Night Ride. Late Night Ride is like a darker, eerier sound. That just kind of like how I am. Like Lone Ranger really speaks to that whole vibe of how I am. I really be moving around in the streets a lot by myself. And I like to move around at night because it's just less people on the road. It's calm, it's quiet. I can think. I make my music at night. So that sound is what I wanted to kind of get out there. I was like, okay, let me get this dark, cool, eerie sound, like late sound, late night ride sound out. And that's what's out now. What I'm working on. I don't know what I'm going to do from now. I had that concept for an album, Cowboys and Gangsters, and I'm recording and doing, working on that. So that is what I want to do next, but I don't know what that's going to sound like yet.
Okay, definitely. So what has been the response to your EP?
People loving it. I was on the way over here just like grinning from ear to ear because I'm getting some real love on the EP.
Nice.
From friends, community, industry people, like big names and folks. I'm like, oh man, like people really listening to my stuff. Like, you know, the Compton Cowboys have fans. So our fans is really loving it because it's the sound of our brand that we've already built.
Right.
Like the audience is there for it, which is beautiful, which is which was also very intentional because I was doing the music since 2009. So when I started to get the Compton Cowboys together in 2017, I was like, okay, let me focus on getting this brand, this movement together, this community and this culture together. And then once I get that going, now we have an audience that we could then present the music to. So I kind of sidelined like recording and stuff for a while. Like all the music I was making up until Compton Cowboys was just, I would say it was just regular stuff that anybody could kind of do.
Right.
I was really mostly focused on songwriting. So I was writing a lot of songs that I wanted to place with like a big artist like Chris Brown's and, you know, Young Thugs and whoever that was hot, like just writing songs. But once I'd gotten back into the Compton Cowboys thing, I was like, man, what if I make the music to match this? And so I just started building that. And I'm like, oh, man, let's just build this up. And then that actually started making me walk around more in my cowboy hat. I'm wearing more. I'm just around the horses more, around the ranch more. So I just took that energy into the studio. And I just started doing songs that made me feel how I was looking and stuff I was doing. And I was like, oh, man, this could work. I did one song that is called Hood Like the Rodeo. And it's a rap song. It's fire. Like, it's going to be on my album. And I did it. And once I put that song down, I was like, oh, man, this is the direction. Like, this is the sound. Like, so I started building from there. So I started recording from that time. So, you know, like, I have a bunch of stuff that I'm going to figure out what my album is going to sound like. But people really, they get it. Like, okay. They hear it and they're like, oh, I get, especially with the Compton Cowboys thing as the context for the music. It's just like people get it and they like it and it makes sense. So I'm happy about that.
Okay, good. Definitely. Because when you feel good about what you're putting out, it allows you to continue to create at, you know, a high capacity. So I'm really glad to hear that it's being well received. So
thank you.
Definitely looking forward to hearing more. You mentioned, you know, starting Compton Cowboys and wanting, you know, people to kind of know what you guys are doing over here in Compton, you know. But at what point did you decide, you know what, I need to really incorporate this as a brand, like, and let, like, people know? Like, at what point was that decision made?
Right. So we all the Compton Cowboys, there's 9 of us. We all, in some form or shape or fashion, grew up together riding horses in a program that my aunt started in 1988 called the Compton Junior Posse. So we're all like homies that kind of, like, I was born into it. And then, like, you know, you meet neighbors down the street when you're little or homies at the park. And they would come to the house and be like, oh, can I ride? So we all kind of just like started being homies that would ride together in this program together. And so that was our lifestyle. That was our background. And so we got an opportunity. We got a call. My aunt randomly got the Guinness Beer Company found us. They were looking to do a Black Cowboy commercial for their brand, which is still one of my favorite pieces of work that we've done. But they wanted to do the commercial, but they didn't have the the assets, right? The people, the horses, the culture, and the vibes. So they just reached out. I guess they just looked up like Black Cowboys in Los Angeles or something. And the organization Compton Junior Posse came up. So they found their way to us. It was like, hey, we got this commercial concept. We would love to bring you guys on board. Like, how do we do it? So they brought us in. We worked that commercial. We did it. I was able to help produce on it. And that came out. And I knew after we shot it, and it was a major production. I'm talking like 3 days. Like, this is like the big brand, like the corporates, the marketing directors flew in from Ireland and everything, like major shoot. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, dang, this is huge. Like, and I'm like, if this comes out and it was going to be like a marquee piece for Ireland and the UK, which is like Chevy in America. Like, you see Chevy commercials all day, every day in America.
Right.
I'm like, yo, they're going to be running this piece like that, and it's going to be their marquee piece for, like, the brand for a while. I'm like, yo, this could set us up to be, like, something. I was like, I don't know what, but I was like, yo, what if we could just turn this whole thing into, like, that's our lick. Like, we like Black Cowboys that do filming and do culture and, like, people, like, we a crew, like, that does stuff. You can hire us to do stuff. You can hire us to pop up. You can hire us to film. We the real cowboys, one. We could really ride these horses, but we also had the look and the aesthetic that could work on camera. Mm. So I'm like, yo, that could be our whole lane. Like, we could build a whole business like that. Mm. So I just, like, hit the ground running. I was like, you know what? This commercial going to come out. People going to start looking for who, like, they're going to be like, who are those cowboys? Who are those people in that commercial? I was like, we need to be ready and set up for when they start asking that. So before the commercial was about to come out, once we shot it, And everybody was loving it, I was like, oh, they're going to put it out. Because sometimes they shoot stuff and it doesn't come out. But I was like, it's going to come out. They're going to love it. So let's start working now. So I was like, boom, reserve the website, CompTheCowboys.com. Reserve the Instagram. Started just getting all the assets together, all the IP together. And just start putting it up, launching stuff, and be like, okay, so now we're ready. So then that's exactly what happened, like clockwork. The commercial came out. Everybody started reaching out. Like, all these brands, like reality TV companies, film studios, like, where are you guys? What can we do something? So I was like, boom, that's the lick right there. So ever since then, I was like, yo, we could build up a great brand on Instagram. Let's just get a great logo and just be like, yo, we Black Cowboys, and we put everything on camera. We ride, we teach kids, and just make it everything dope. Make it everything visually dope through content. But that's going to change the game. And like clockwork, and just my understanding of social media and all that. Mind you, I have a master's degree in entertainment and music business administration. Like, I get this whole space.
Right.
So I'm just like lining it up, setting it up. And it just worked like clockwork. And so I was like, that's at that point, let's establish it as a brand and a business. And then that way we could not only make a living off of it, but we could have our own efforts, our own fundraising efforts to sustain our own nonprofit. Because that way we don't have to be begging for grants and public money. Like, you know how that process is so hard and so taxing on you, and it's so like compromising, it's just so much. Like, and then for the kickback you get from it, it's almost not even worth it. Like, you sit here, you're doing all these applications, spend all these hours, and then you get like $5,000 or $10,000, maybe, if you make the cut. But then it's like, you spend that in a couple, like, especially with our overhead at the ranch, we spend that in a couple weeks.
Right.
So I'm like, I'm not doing that. I need to build a business that could bring in opportunities and funds that we could make money on. And that way we could say every quarter we donate back to our own nonprofit, you know what I'm saying, to where we could feed our own horses and we don't got to ask nobody for nothing.
Right.
So we do everything that we do is our own stuff. Like, we are self-sustained top to bottom. Everything is private sector funding that we get through our opportunities, through our business that we do and our brand that we run. And it works. So that was the dream. And it's like, we hitting it now. Like, we scratched the surface and we really about to get in that mode. Like,
yeah, dang, that's amazing. And shout out to you for seeing the vision and, you know, setting everything up, getting in position.
Thank you.
So, you know, you mentioned that the Compton Cowboy brand was branched off from, you know, something that your aunt had started, the Compton Junior Posse, and a commercial from there. You know, you started Compton Cowboys in 2017. It's been about 4 years now since you guys have been, you know, established like as a brand that the people know. Mm-hmm. In this time frame, what kind of collaborations have the Compton Cowboys been able to do with other businesses and brands and things like that?
We've done some incredible work that I'm have so much gratitude for, and just feel so humbled to be able to do, because we've worked with some of the biggest brands in the world on all kinds of platforms and all kinds of opportunities. So we did a short film with Google. that they put up that they love and supported us through.
Nice.
We had a global campaign with Adidas. We're coming off right now with the global campaign for Tommy Hilfiger, which we were the face of. We've done so many major big brand. You know, we worked with Zara. You know, we were like, if I had my list, you'll be like, wow. And I would be like, wow, because we've done so many incredible campaigns. And that has all of that has helped us, you know, build our business, spread the word about what we're doing. And that's the most exciting part about what we're doing is that I knew for a fact that entertainment is the strongest engine, is the most robust engine you can use to storytell and to raise awareness. Like, you could take the traditional approach of raising awareness in your hood. Like, you can go put up signs and knock door to door. You'll accomplish a certain level of awareness raising and fundraising with that. You know what I'm saying? But that's a long game, and it's taxing, and it's hard. Or you could just do one killer ad for a brand that's going to get put out for the whole world to see. And you're going to tell your story to millions of people in 1 minute. And they're going to tell you, and they're going to want to donate and help and offer new opportunities. So that was my vision, just my understanding of entertainment and how it works and how people move. Because I have my BA in sociology, so I really care a lot about people. And I care a lot about, and I understand, have an understanding of how it all moves, like the whole ecosystem of people, places, and how it all works.
Mm-hmm.
So that was my basis. And then I went and got my master's in entertainment and music. So now I'm like seeing everything through a certain lens of like, yo, how people move through watching stuff and how that makes a person get up and go take action. Or I'm understanding all of this. So I'm like, let's use entertainment to raise awareness. We don't got to knock door to door. Let's do commercials.
Mm-hmm.
We ain't got to go be calling everybody all day. You know what I'm saying? Let's put out an album. They could listen to that. Just different avenues. So right now we're doing, we have our book that came out. That's what we attacking the literature market, telling our story in the book. How did published.
Can we talk about that real quick? Shout out to Walter. How did that book come about?
Walter reached out to us through Instagram DM early on. I think we were at like 10,000 followers or something at that time. And he had just got hired at the New York Times as like the one, you know, urban street reporter or whatever. Like, you know, they're trying to diversify the reporting, the office and stuff. Like what you do, you do journalism and stuff. So that's that. But not in their office, right. But I'm saying like they were looking for people like y'all.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? To bring a perspective.
Not like me.
It might be like you don't say
that. No, they don't want nobody like me.
They don't want you telling the real.
But shout out to Walter, you know, because it takes a certain type of person to be able to maneuver these spaces but still retain a sense of themselves.
Right, precisely.
And I think that that's what he does, you know, and still understands the dynamics of, you know, being in those spaces but understanding like just the politics at play, right?
Nuances and how to move.
Nuances, like how to move. Right. How to move.
Just generally how to move. So he reached out through us, through DM to us and was like, man, I grew up in local Linwood area. I used to see the Black Cowboys all the time. That's something that always stuck with me. I just got this spot at the Times and I want to do something that is for the people. That's going to uplift us and uplift our stories and make a difference. So I want to write my story on y'all. So they gave him the opportunity and he smashed it. You know what I'm saying? We had our lead in off the front page of the Times. Our lead in was down in the corner. And then they gave us a full page in color in the New York Times. And that was the starting point of a lot of opportunities. Like, that really changed the game. Because that was where the world got to see what we was on for the first time. Because the New York Times is a global platform.
Yo.
So they read it. And little do you know, book publishers, book agencies started reaching out. And then Walter got a deal to be an author for a publisher for HarperCollins and got an agent and stuff off of that. And then they wanted to do a book off the story. So we did a whole book deal. And so it ended up happening. So we put it all together and we worked. He spent some years with us getting to know who he was, what we got going on, and just did his thing. And it came out. And so I'm like, man, you know, right now we got the matter of fact, the soft covers just came out. So those are available now for those who didn't want to have the hardcover or just one of the different option. We have two versions of the book, the adult, like the regular version of the book, and then the young reader's edition that kind of takes out all the, you know, the profane stuff.
Right.
But that happened. So that was our first big official project, like on the big scene, like a real book, which is dope because, you know,
get opportunities to put books out. And especially, like, it ain't no Black cowboy books that really is like that. So it was just a special opportunity all around.
Right.
So we doing the literature. Then I'm like, boom, okay, we got literature out the way. Boom. What can we do next? All right, what's easy? Let's do fashion now. So we started, like, just put on our swag and, like, taking pictures and putting it out there for people to see it. And then we started getting reached out to by big fashion houses. You know what I'm saying? We did Pierre Moss early on. Mm. We did a few other ones early on. And then the big dogs started reaching out. So, you know, we ended up getting with Adidas and things like that. And then, you know, people wanted to just start seeing this aesthetic, like, because it's fresh and new and different. Like, the a urban street take on the cowboy, you know, vibe. Like, it just was different and dope. So we started doing fashion stuff. So then we launched our own merch. So now we got a whole fashion play in motion.
Hmm.
Then I was like, what else? Okay. Because my main thing was, if we're going to do entertainment, we got to kind of, like, run the board. So we got to do literature, fashion, music, film, television.
Mm.
And so we have projects in all of those spaces now. We have a book out. We have a merch play in motion. We just did our merch collab with our partner, who's we're going to be developing a whole line of Compton Cowboys, like urban cowboy fashion. The music, my music just came out. So now we're doing the music space. It's like the Black cowboy sound is out. We have our feature film in development at Searchlight Pictures, which shout out to Searchlight. They just came off the Oscars. You know, they won Best Picture, Best Director, and Best Actress for Nomadland.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like the patriots of the film industry. Like, they go to the Oscars every year expecting to win Best Picture. In the last 7 years, they won the Best Picture Oscar 4 times.
Mm-hmm.
They did Shape of Water, 12 Years a Slave, Birdman, and now they just won for Nomadland. They're really big about the art of filmmaking. They're not like, they're not trying to make blockbusters, which is why I went with them with our student for our film deal.
Because
people started reaching out for the film, like a lot of big studios and different things. But I really like Searchlight because they were like a boutique studio under the big umbrella of Fox.
Mm-hmm.
But they're like a boutique little team. Which, by the way, they're no longer Fox because Fox sold all their studios to Disney. So now they're technically a Disney studio.
Mm-hmm.
But they just go by Searchlight Pictures instead of Fox Searchlight Pictures. But Searchlight is a boutique of really good people, and they're all about the art of filmmaking. They're not going to go in there and spend $200 million and get like Leonardo DiCaprio and try to get a whole bunch of ticket sales. They're not going to do that.
Okay.
They're going to get a beautiful script, get an incredible director, bring in talent, bring in a couple big names. And a lot of the talent that are in their films are big names, but I feel like they're able to get them because the scripts are so good and the art is so good. So whereas you might not have the big giant budget to do it, they still have the art, and a lot of the actors and talent that really get into their pictures, they love the art of the filmmaking, so they do it like that. But some of their films will have like a dozen big names, and you're like, how did they get all these people in one movie? But it's just a great script, because they go to the Oscars every year expecting to win Best Picture, and actors want to be associated. You know, everybody want to be associated with that.
Right.
So I just love the idea that they was interested in our story. They were great people. They wanted to give back to the organization, tell the story. They were really good folks. They came down to the ranch, brought the studio team, did some real stuff, donated, and all kinds of stuff. So I'm like, man, like, yeah, I like these people. Let's go with them. So then they brought in Prentice Penny, who's the showrunner and one of the writers on Insecure. Him and Issa developed the show together, and they just went off a crazy run doing that. So shout out to Prentice. So we got the film play in motion. And then television is going to come after that. You know what I'm saying? Both reality and scripted television.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're going to start doing animation. Then we're going to do like action figure. Like, it's a whole model.
Right.
That's in motion that I knew would happen if we just executed it and focused on what we were trying to do. So that's where we at now. Yep. And it's working. Now we're able to take care of our own nonprofit and give back to these kids.
So what is the level of the students or the youth that you work with? Like, you know, are these kids like never have seen a horse before, never ridden a horse? Or are they kind of familiar with horses? Like, what kind of kids are you guys working with?
They're all across the board. Some of them come in, no experience. They just, man, I just love what this is. Like, I'm interested. Like, I want to try it. And we bring them in, and it's case by case scenario how they come in, because we definitely have limited space. Obviously, we can't serve the whole world.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're all about trying to, you know, make sure the program has its certain ebb and flow, its balance of, and its mix of, you know, experience versus non different races, boys and girls, like have it mixed. But then they come from, they all have a different vibe. Each one of them have a different vibe, and it's all about supporting them and trying to figure out what they want to do. And some, like, so Zoe came in, she was already, like, full-blown, like, I'm going to be in question. Like, this is what I do. I've been training. I've been doing
and
this.
And how old is she?
She's 16.
Okay. So shout out to her.
She's in high school now. Mm-hmm. And she'll be going to college soon. But by now she's like a full-blown pro. Like she competes against professionals and wins.
Oh wow.
So she's like one of our like star, like, you know, shining examples of what we can do.
And she did she have prior experience with horses?
She did. She grew up, she kind of grew up like around and riding from when she was younger.
Mm-hmm.
And then when she got to the junior posse, she started getting a little more and more training. And then when she got to, she started doing her own thing. And then when Compton Cowboys came about, like we brought in a new level of support. So now it's like we just continuing to try to lift her up. She's going to be an Olympic athlete one day. And she's going to like change the game. Like she's going to make history. Like black girl wins equestrian Olympic gold for the United States of America. Like it's going to be that. And you can mark my words on that. That's going to happen.
Okay, well, shout out to you, Zoe. Keep going, girl.
Yeah,
we see you.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about Junior Posse and your aunt who started this group. What was your aunt's background and what motivated her to start like this kids group?
My auntie grew up loving horses because my grandfather, her dad, used to always just sit around and watch Westerns when he got home from the war.
Mm.
And he would just sit around, watch Westerns and drink whiskey and just scream at the TV all day. And that was like what they would do as a family, like on Saturdays, like daddy watching Westerns. So she grew up like that. And then some people in her community had, where she grew up in Harbor City right here, some people had horses. And she just used to always be bugging them and being all at their house and being like, can I see the horse? And so that was just in her, she just had that bug. And so when she got older and grown and she ended up getting into real estate in the 80s, and she found the Richland Farms, which is ground zero for Compton. Compton was founded as the Richland Farms and built around that. The founder was a farmer. Griffith D. Compton was a farmer. So she found this little town that still remained a farm town because of how the founder set it up. He deeded it to remain a farm town forever. So she just found it just through house shopping and stuff. She's like, oh my goodness, like I could move and I could still live in the city, but I could have horses and what? No brainer. So she got a house, had her couple of horses, and she just started from there. It didn't start as like trying to do something for the community. It started as like, oh, I could like a lifestyle choice for her and her family. Then she got there and realized like, dog, I just moved to Compton in like 85. Like it's like the worst thing, like the worst time in the inner city. Like you got all the police. Anything you can name that would be wrong with the community all at once was wrong. Like,
right.
Police brutality, drugs, crimes, gangs, you know, political corruption, anything you can name, like it was that in the 80s and 90s. You know, we coming off the crack epidemic, all that. So she like, oh, she realized that really quickly when things just started to happen around her, including, you know, which was the pinnacle of that was like her son getting shot, my cousin, and he's alive, but he was just a kid. Also, you know, gang violence, people shooting at each other. He was riding his bike, got shot. And that was really traumatic for our family. And she just was faced with the decision of like, dang, am I going to leave? I could leave. You know, she had her bread, right? And she was in, you know, real estate. And at that time was doing fine. And my dad was coming out of Harvard and had his bread working and stuff. And she was like, well, we could leave and go to greener pastures and just not even deal with this. But then it's like, that's exactly what's wrong with the hood. It's like people that get affluence, they leave. And then everybody that's behind is just scraping for scraps. And they don't have
or they're getting pushed out, not to cut you off. Yeah. But it's like, do the people choose to leave or are they getting pushed out because they want to protect themselves from the elements in the community?
I think that it might be a combination of both. But at that time, you know, this is when black people was just starting to get bread and starting to feel like they could live and integrate and all that stuff. And my dad has this whole philosophy about how integration, you know, the dark side of integration, which was that we left our people behind, you know what I'm saying? So that's a whole conversation. But the whole thing is like, you know, blacks in the 80s starting to get money, wanting to live middle class, you know what I'm saying? Want to go live up on the west side in Brentwood, Ladera Heights, wherever, you know? And like, yeah, you can't blame people for wanting to live in peace and not have danger and not, you know, go to have their kids have good schools. You can't blame them. That makes sense as a family. You want to do that.
Right.
The after effect of that is that if everyone that had all the doctors, lawyers, pastors, everybody that got, you know, some type of influence, positive perspective and knows how to develop a community and lead a community, if they all dip and they just dipping because they want to live without, you know, having to worry about this stuff happening to them and their kids. But if they all leave, then the only thing left behind is the gangs, the criminals, the drug dealers, all those people are still there.
Right.
And then that's how they get the grip on the community. And then it becomes a perpetual cycle of them running everything. And it just runs into the ground until somebody, and then until you cycle out. So my aunt was like, I can't go out like that. Like, yeah, I don't want to, that's not my legacy. Like, I can't be like, man, I'm a black person. I'm very pro-black. She was in the Nation and all that, you know, coming out all that at the time. I can't be one of these people that, you know, I'm in the hood. I moved to the hood because I wanted to be in the hood. But then I got some bread and I'm like, oh, it's bad over here. I'm out. Like, she's like, nah, I ain't going out like that. Especially because all the other mothers and all the other families in the community is dealing with this same trauma. And it's like, she felt like it would be abandoning them if she just left. Hmm. So she felt like, and my grandmother, it was real big on that. Like, love your people, support your people, be in your community, feed people, take care of people. So she was like, I ain't going out like that. Like, I'm just going to stay and figure out something to do, like how to change it. And then it kind of hit her like, man, all these kids always knocking on my door all the time to ride, to like see my horses, or when I ride, they want to follow me around. And my kids like the horses. And when they ride, they don't even be thinking about all the streets. They just be wanting to ride. So she was like, dang, what if I use the horses to like distract all the kids and like make them want to come over here? And then when they come, I could tell them, hey, if you want to ride, you got to do your homework. You got to show me a report card. You got to go to school. I don't want to hear about no truancy. Like, I'm a teacher. You got to clean and learn the discipline of being around the horse and be responsible. You got to make sure all these things. So she started teaching them life skills because they had interest in the horses. But the life skills, her teaching the life skills was like her way to get them to get on the right track. So the kids wanted to ride the horses so bad that they would just do what they got to do. They would go to school, get their report cards, you know, be in class, not acting up in the house and doing what they got to do. And so it started working. Like, it was just like her kids first and then they friends and then more and more. At one point, it was a gang of us, like a gang of kids, little homies, like all of us, boys and girls from the hood, like in the hood, hoodlums, like, but really riding horses though, you know, like really a group. The Compton Junior Posse, we used to go to all these events and people would know who we was and we would win. We would be the only little black groups in some of these places, going out to all these places in Malibu and Palo Verdes and all that. And we would kill it. We had some little horses from the auction that we, you know, rescue horses that wasn't that to know to somebody, anybody else would be nothing. But we loved them. We seen what they had to offer and we had that same chip on our shoulder. So we used to go to these events and kill every and take home everything. All the first place, all the trophies. So it became that. And then that's our legacy. And she's like, man, I'm in here. I've got these horses. I'm teaching. I'm saving and rescuing these lives. So this is my life now. So she dedicated 30 years of her life to that. And she just retired in 2018.
Oh, she's still alive.
Yeah, she's still out. Yeah, she's still alive. She still come by and, you know, see what's going on. She got a little quiet little farm out in Norco now where she's living real peacefully and just relaxing.
Nice.
But when she retired, it was time for somebody to step up, you know, and naturally it was one of us had to do it or, you know, an outsider. And then it's like, can't let the outsiders come in because they don't understand the texture and they don't understand how to do this. So I was like, man, I'm coming out of grad school. Like, dang, we just did this commercial. We got the Compton Cowboys brand, like, starting to become a thing. Auntie wants to retire. She can't do the ranch no more. No brainer. Like, I'm going to step into the fold. Like, I'm going to just run it. But if I'm running it, I'm going to do it my own way. Like, I don't want to have no super, like, micromanagement and oversight. Like, I'm coming in with my own new board of directors, my own new everything, because I want to bring everything into the future. And so I was like, I came down here. I was like, man, look, we're turning this into a, we're about to spin off the Junior Posse into the, we're going to make the Compton Cowboys be like the edgy Western, like, side of it all. I make that a brand. And then we're going to rebrand the nonprofit as Compton Junior Equestrians because we want to open it up to be like just a welcoming and a professional industry grade, like, organization, like Compton Junior Equestrians. So, because we do all kinds of different things. So that's what I did. And that's where we at now. Yeah.
Okay, well, shout out to your aunt. What's her name?
Maisha Akbar.
Maisha Akbar. Shout out to her. Cause
shout out to my auntie. That's... She crazy, too. You know we all got that crazy auntie. Or a few of them.
Right. We love them,
though. I love her, though. She's something else, though. I love her, though. God bless her heart. She changed the game. She the reason why we all right here. She the reason why we all, like, I could be here telling you, like, that I'm doing what I'm doing. Like, it's the trajectory goes all the way back to her decision to stay in the hood and make a difference. So that's why our motto for Compton Cowboys is streets raised us, horses saved us. Like, we was raising the streets of Compton. Like, some of us gang members and was active, you know what I'm saying, in that shit. Like, but the horses kept pulling us back to each other and pulling us back to the cowboy life. And, you know, whereas some of the other homies didn't have nothing like that and they fell to the streets, you know what I'm saying, dead in jail and that whole or on drugs or whatever, like, you know how the story go.
Right.
But we didn't suffer that. We didn't experience that fate because we had the horses. So we owe it all to these horses and we owe really it all to my auntie who was the first one, like, I'm using these horses to rock with these kids. So that's what's up.
Okay, definitely. So let's bring it back to the music a little bit. You know, we talked about Compton Cowboys, you know, you starting it as a brand and the success that it has had to collaborate, you know, with these different major corporations and things like that. So within the success of Compton Cowboys, why is it important for you, for the people to know you as Randy Savvy, the artist, the musician?
I like that question. Thank you for that. It is important that the music happen because the music is the key to the heart of the culture. Like, music moves people like nothing. Nothing is even close. Like, not film, not activism, not nothing. Like, music moves the world. And some of our biggest influencers of all time in the history of the world have been musicians.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's just how it is. So my thing was, it just was seemed like divine intervention to be like, yo, I know you do the music, but go put the cowboy hat back on. Go back to the hood. Go back, you know what I'm saying? I was living in the valley working as an accountant, music accountant. I had my master's degree. I had the condo. You know what I mean? I
was on that. You was popping.
And I wasn't, yeah, I was popping, quote unquote, but it wasn't popping. Because I wasn't
rooted.
I wasn't rewarded. I wasn't feeling it. Even though I had what I thought what the dream was, you know what I'm saying, at that time. And I'm chasing the music thinking, dang, how am I going to get this music off? Like, I got to do something. How? Like, I know I can make music, but how do I get it off? Like, that's the question. So I feel like just divine intervention. God was just throwing me back into the hood on purpose. I moved back to the hood, quit my job, moved back to my dad's basement just so I could be on the ranch and with the homies. And I knew once I did that, I would figure it out. I always move very much so with my calling. Like, I don't question my calling. Like, I'm very spiritually inclined in that way. Like, I seen the vision. I feel like God talked to me and showed me what I could do. It was my job to figure out how to execute it based on my circumstances. So I moved back to the hood and gladly, proudly. You know what I'm saying? Like, I wanted to be back anyway because I was in the valley, like, yeah, working in a corporate office, like, and I can't even go find a homie. I can't, ain't nobody, everybody out here speak proper English and eat at tender greens and shit. I can't find no fried chicken or nothing. Like, I can't find nothing hood that I just grew up and loved, you know, which is good for me because, you know what I mean, I did get healthier when I was out there. But still, though, you know what I'm saying? Like, the hood is beautiful. It's a beauty in the hood that you can't find nowhere else. And I missed that. And that my spirit missed that, too. And on top of missing the farm and the ranch because I wasn't around no animals or no trees or the birds. I grew up like that. The roosters wake us up.
Mm-hmm.
And I was waking up to an alarm clock. And, you know, so it just wasn't right. So went back to the hood and I was like, man, the music, I was like, you know what? I'm going to figure out the music. Let me just focus on this calling right now. I got to go to the hood. My auntie need me to run this ranch. I already got the homies. We got a great potential opportunity on the table with being like developing the Compton Cowboys as a thing. And I knew from day one when I first had the vision that that would work. Just because of the nature of it, like young niggas, that's dope. Riding horses, put everything on camera in high quality. You know what I'm saying? With the right captions and the right logos. Like, it's already, I seen it. God showed it to me. Like, bro, this is it. Just now, you just got to build up to make it happen.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, I knew that would work.
Mm-hmm.
In the interim, I'm like, I got to figure out how to hustle it up and just hold it together while we transition. And so it ended up working out. My auntie retired. Her board of directors left us some funds to like transition to help get our stuff off the ground. I was able to bring myself in and it was funded to be able to, okay, now I can focus on building this thing. I was just in the trenches every day. I was literally with my hands building stuff. Like, I'm in the backyard pulling gates, building stalls. I'm like, oh, no, I want to put the arena over there because it's going to look like this. I want to put the stalls all against the one wall so like all the horses could be together and have that bond. I want to boom change this so we can put the horse trailers over there. Like, I'm over there just, my whole vision just coming to life. I'm back there with the homies. We all back there. And they trusted me. And that goes further than anything is because I couldn't have did none of this without the homies. Like, I had the vision and the energy to go like, yo, we got to go. But they all was like, bro, whatever we doing, man, let's go, bro. Because they know what these horses do. And they knew, and we all grew up like that. And we all had a love for each other. So they trusted me and we did it. And so I was like, okay, now that this thing is coming alive. So in the midst of all of this, I'm like, again, I'm wearing my hat more now because I'm on the ranch. I'm doing more cowboy stuff. Like I'm doing interviews. I'm going to take pictures. I'm starting to wear my hat more. I'm in the vibe. I even found myself going back and listening to country music because I was in that vibe. My auntie used to be like that. We used to ride to the rodeo. She would be listening to Tim McGraw and Reba McEntire and Alan Jackson and Garth Brooks and all these people. Mm-hmm. And I love those songs. I love this. Some of my fondest memories of all time is being a little kid in the truck with all the homies. We all packed back there and we ain't got no seatbelts, nothing, but we got our little rally burgers and we on our way to the rodeo. We all got our hats on, nice shirts, our chap boots and everything. And we listening to country music, laughing, hanging out the window, you know what I'm saying, on the way to the rodeo. And that was like some of my fondest memories of all time. So I started getting nostalgic about that, being back home and just being around my aunt and wearing my hat and being around my dad. So I was just like, man, I just start riding, listening to country music, boom. I was just like, man, I remember this. And then one of the trucks that my auntie had, she gave to me when she retired because she had the extra one that was on the ranch too. So she gave me a truck. Now I'm back on the ranch doing cowboy stuff, wearing my hat. Now I got a cowboy truck. Now I'm getting nostalgic about listening to the music, but I'm still me. I'm still Randy. I'm still like, I'm flat. You know what I'm saying? I got the swag. I'm different things. So I'm like, dang. So now I'm moving around like this first. And then I'm like, okay. My lifestyle was, I always was going to the studio. So my lifestyle, I'll be living this, all doing all this stuff. And then I would still, at the end of the day, go to the studio. So now I'm going into the studio with my cowboy hat on, which I never was not doing. So I'm like, bro, I'm in the studio with the cowboy whole shebang on. I'm like, bro, let's do some cowboy songs. I would just wanted to have fun. I wanted to have fun with the tone and the twang and all that. Like, I just was having fun. Music is fun. You know what I'm saying? Right. Just the art of it. And it was coming out dope. And it's so crazy because the first demo I did, if you listen to my song and then you hear Old Town Road, you'll be like, he knew what he was doing. Like, he was on to something. Because I was running around in 2015 with this demo song that I did that was a trap country fun song, kiddie kind of sounding song like that. Just because I was having fun. I went to the studio. With my whole thing on, my boys was over there, and I had the whole cowboy shit. I was like head to toe in it, boots and everything. And my boy put up, I was like, man, I want to do like a trap country song. Just like some fun. So I was in there sipping whatever, turned the beat on, recorded the whole song called Tilt My Hat. And it was like a trap country, like like that kind of song. So I got the song done, and I'm like, oh my God, bro, this is the, nobody has done this. So I'm running around the whole industry, bro, we got to get this, whoever nails this sound, like I'm going to do this sound. This is it. The biggest challenge was all the country people was like, because I had connects on both. The country people was like, that ain't, you know, our people don't, we don't know, you know, 808 drums and all that, like hi-hats and stuff, that ain't the vibe.
Right.
And then all the hip-hop people was like, bro, why are you singing with this twang and all this country? You know, those worlds are far apart.
Right,
you know,
right.
Nowadays, like the commercial industries are starting to push them. You got like groups like Florida Georgia Line and stuff playing around with Nelly and doing different, you know what I mean? Like, they plan, but nobody has merged that at that time, especially. That was never a thing.
Right.
So I'm running around the whole industry like, man, this is going to work. Whoever, like, I want to do this. This is going to be my way, bro. Like, this is it. And it turns out it wasn't exactly what I wanted to do because I didn't want to necessarily do, like, deep trap like that. Like, I wanted still to be more rhythmic and stuff. But I did a demo. I'm running around. Everybody was like, it's good, but what do we do with this?
Okay.
Who's going to listen? Who's going to buy this? Like, these audiences are so far apart. Like, this don't even make sense for, you know, once the marketing minds and the lawyers and all these people get involved, then they change the creative people whole mood. Like, you know what I mean? So nobody really, they liked it, but nobody got it. And then one day, one of my friends, Haley, she sent me a something on Instagram. It was like one of those little clips. At this time now, you would refer to it. I would compare it to like a TikTok-y kind of video or something. I think it was Vine or something that was popping at that time.
Okay.
It was just a horse like bobbing his head. And it was that song in the background. It'll go, "Trailer in my tractor and all in my baby." Like Lil Nas song. And she sent it to me like, bro, your song is way better than this. But when I heard the song, I immediately thought like, this is who, like, who is this? Like, what is this? Like, this is what I wanted to do. So my heart dropped. I'm like, oh. Mm. Then that's when Lil Nas X blew up. Like, the whole Old Town Road just took off.
Mm.
But, and mind you, I had been telling people that this was going to happen. So when he took off, I felt vindicated in a way, because I knew I was onto something, but I also was heartbroken because I was like, I wanted to be the guy.
Right.
And people didn't believe me. And now these same people are blowing my phone up because they remember my demo. Because, you know, once something get hot, the whole industry now, everybody jockers, everybody nutsackers like this. Oh, this is how, this is the new thing. Like,
right.
But bro, I've been telling you this for years. Like, but okay, mm-hmm. So everybody hitting me. I'm like, whatever, whatever. So, but anyway, that was like, okay, I knew I was onto something. So when that happened and that song blew up, that actually is good for me because now people at least can say, oh, okay, black dude with a cowboy hat on, doing mm-hmm. hip-hop and country. There's mm-hmm. some type of quote-unquote precedent now. But the thing is, because he wasn't an authentic representation of that culture and lifestyle and all that, he just had his fun little one song. He mm-hmm. just did that, and that was like a caricature.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's gone.
Right.
So now everybody's looking like, who is going to be the artist that really represents this sound? And the market is now established because we can prove that the numbers work. This is the most celebrated Billboard song of all time. Like, it went the longest time at number one of any song of all time.
Hmm.
Made so much money, made so much noise. Like, so now nobody can, when I call you and say, yo, I'm doing black and country stuff, nobody can say anything to me now.
Right.
They're like, oh, now they're like, oh, let me hear it. What's up?
Right.
Now that the precedent is set and now that people can't knock anything I say at all, now all I gotta do is curate the vibes and get it right and get it out there, and it's gonna work. Like, it was always gonna work. But now because he busted through the door, and it kind of had to happen that way because it had to be funny and like a meme and something that would go viral. It went viral off the funny and meme style nature of it all. It didn't go viral initially because it was a great record.
Mm-hmm.
It went viral because the kids was loving it and they was doing all their little, and they, you know how it is.
Right.
So I knew that song would have its run, and I knew that, but I was happy that it set the precedent. I was happy that the door got busted open and the conversation got changed because I knew that he wasn't the real guy that was going to do it. And so, which means that there's now a void in the market. Mm-hmm. And then everybody's like, who's the artist that's going to represent this for real? And then that's why I come in. I'm dropping my shit on you. Like, it's the real street cowboy from the hood. And I'm from Compton. Like, just the brand of Compton alone already speaks volumes and is already, people resonate. So now I throw the cowboy with it. It all going, so like, I'm sitting here in front of you now knowing that it's going to work. It's just timing now. It's like getting it right, getting the music right. But I know the music is important because everything we try to do in our community, we could do it at a certain level local, and that's cool. When the music hits and they hear what I'm saying, I'm talking about real stuff. I'm just not one of these flashy, you know, get my money, where the hell's at? I'm not doing that.
Mm-hmm.
My first song, you know what I'm saying, first rodeo, the lines in that song is like so real. Like, I'm saying stuff like, you can't ball when your people is broken. You know what I'm saying? Like, so my stuff is real. So now that when I get the music to hit, and when the sound and the culture grabs it because it sound dope, and it starts moving the waves, but then they hearing me, I'm going to be changing the world with my shit. Like, I'm going to be able to do so much for my community. I'm going to be able to move the world through the music and the messaging in the music. Because what I'm finding is the sound, the bop that's going to move the world, but then the messaging that's going to change people. Because that'd be the biggest disconnect. Like, all the rappers that's dope lyrically and got the vibe, the message, they don't got the bop. That's why all the bop rappers is winning, because at the end of the day, music is just, it's meant to make you move and feel like something.
Right.
And today, these rappers that have figured out that bounce, they don't got to say nothing.
It's the beat.
It's the beat and the melodies and all that. So my thing is, how do we find that bridge, that gap? Like, and with my EP, you can hear that.
Mm-hmm.
You can hear where I got the sound, the drums, the stuff that's gonna make you really bop, or the hood gonna listen to me, or even, but then my lyrics is on point and it's blended and it's presented in a way where I don't sound like a preacher.
Mm-hmm.
When you have J. Cole and all these dudes, like, they, a lot of the hood, they fly over the hood's head, because the hood niggas on the block don't want to hear no nigga preaching about change your life, bro. That's not what I'm doing right now. I want to turn up, like. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking, like, I'm gonna turn you up, but my writing is in such a way that it's gonna subliminally reprogram you to be like, oh, you know what I'm saying? Dang, I shouldn't probably be shooting. I shouldn't probably be doing this. And that's the cool thing, to be like conscious. So that's what I'm doing now. And that's why the music is important, because it's gonna create that draw and that moment, that movement in the world of like people rocking. Hmm. But then now the messaging is gonna change people's hearts and minds and bridge so many gaps and bring so many cultures together, whites and black. I believe my stuff could cure racism.
Hmm.
I believe that, because my audience at my shows is going to be like the hicks in the country and the niggas on the block. Facts. At the same show.
Right.
Where they would never be together on anything ever. Okay. For any reason. And matter of fact, if they came across each other, they'll be at odds. Like, what's up? Like, you racist or you whatever. And they'll be go down. But right. When my music is going to bring them in the venue together through the fanship of me as an artist, and they all gonna like my music, and then they might start rocking together and be like, bro, you know, we like the same thing. We got, oh, what y'all doing after this? Oh, man, we got some beer in the truck. Mm-hmm. Oh, what y'all, oh, yeah, same thing. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? We got some beer, we got some whatever, we got some smoke, whatever. Oh, we do that too. Like, it's all the same. And I think a lot about that. Like, Ray Charles was in his time bringing, like, you know, that swing, and but doing gospel, doing all this, and bringing white and black people together through his music, like helping cure, like, the problems through his music.
Right.
So that's what I'm on. That's what my stuff is going to do. So I could talk all day about that, but that's the way. That's what I'm on.
That's what's up. So we actually been on here for about an hour. But before I let you go, I definitely want to talk to you about raising kids in Compton right now. Or just raising kids in general. How is it being a father?
Being a father is the most rewarding thing in life. Like, everything I do is like, all the fun stuff is great. Like, it's fun. Like, I feel just happy. And I'm like, oh, it's cool.
Mm-hmm.
But like, the moments when you like waking up, like you sleep, and then your little baby is just like waking you up, like, and you were opening your eyes, and you got this cute, and it's your kid, so right. It look like you, and, like, and it's just like, man, you a trip, bro. Like, it's just crazy. And then you see them getting big, you see them start to say words and talk, take their steps, and like, parenthood is beautiful. Like, I would, you know, encourage, like, humans. That's what we. Do like that's our purpose, is to like be here and create people to make the world a better place. That's what I believe, and work together and do great things. So fatherhood is my favorite part of life, and I'm new to it still. My big boy is 3, his name is Lux, and my little boy is Verse, and he's 1. He just turned 1 on the 24th. And it's just amazing. Like, I wouldn't trade nothing in the world for my kids. Like, being a father is everything. Like, and I want to be able to give them some stuff. You know what I'm saying? I want to be able to pass down. And that was the main reason why I quit my job. Because once I realized that my kid's mother was pregnant with my son, my first son, and I'm in the corporate office, like, man, I'm just an employee up here. Like, they don't even care. Like, like, you know what I'm saying? I got my little salary that, you know, they pay you just enough to be broke but live okay. You know what I'm saying? So you're really in the rat race. You can't. So I'm like, I can't get, my whole mind started thinking different when I was becoming a parent. So I was like, man, I'm out of here, bro. Like, I need to go. If I'm going to hustle and if I'm going to do something, if I'm going to struggle, I'm going to struggle for my stuff. Like, you know what I'm saying? So went back to the neighborhood, started hustling it up. And now Compton Cowboys is the thing. Now when my boys start getting big, they could be involved in something that's theirs. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's all about these kids. It's all about the kids. Like, we have a lot of fun. And we love it. And we still some niggas. And we still, you know what I mean, whatever. But we all about family. And when we down there in the neighborhood and we got the ranch and all of us got our kids and they running around and they get to feel the dirt. You know what I'm saying? They get to hear the birds and they get to, we planting gardens and they get to grow vegetables and stuff. Like, that's what it's all about. So that's what I love the most about all of this, is just being a parent is my favorite part.
Definitely. Yeah, that's amazing. So, well, before we wrap up, is there anything else that you want the people to know about your music, about the brand, about Compton in general?
Compton is a beautiful place. Don't get it twisted. You know what I'm saying? People like to skew our brand and taint, you know, your mind about where we are. We ain't that. Like, come find out for yourself. Compton is a beautiful place. but beautiful people and beautiful things going on. And that's all I want people to know. I always tell people that. You know, and just be keep your mind open for new ideas, and we're gonna reach it. We gonna shift the narrative. You know what I'm saying? That's what we doing with our stuff, and we collaborating with people that's on the same wave. Mm-hmm. And other than that, you know, be on the lookout for Compton Cowboys stuff. Google it, look it up, be on the lookout. We changing community, we having fun, we doing great stuff, we breaking barriers, we changing the culture. We, you know what I'm saying? Like in this past election cycle, I had gang members voting and proudly.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Like one of the most moving moments I had in this whole situation.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Like my big homies that grew up reckless, you know what I'm saying? On the hood shit. And, you know, we out there chilling and we all about to, we had decided that we was going to go drop our ballots off at the box or whatever. And so we all out there chilling on the block. And then the homie was like, the big homie's like, it was an open invite to say, whoever wants to be involved, like, you know, we going to go.
Mm-hmm.
We was all out there chilling on the block or whatever. And then the big homie was like, oh man, I'm going to catch you in a minute. He was like, oh wait, I'll be right back, bro. He like patting his pockets. And I'm thinking he on some like, exit left, like, yeah, I'm not doing that. But then I'm like, all right, bro, you out of here? He's like, nah, bro, I gotta go get my ballot. I'll be right back. And that touched my heart, you feel me?
Hmm.
Because that's what this shit is about. You know what I mean? Like, changing people.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm proud of that. And that's my dad's. That was my dad's dream. You know what I'm saying? He got a Harvard MBA. My dad could be doing anything.
Hmm.
My dad could be working for Tesla right now. But my dad moved to the block. And he was like, I'm going to raise my kids right here and be influenced to the next ones. And now we standing here, you know what I'm saying, influencing the world, being able to do positive shit on behalf of Black people.
Definitely.
And that's what it's all about.
Well, I just want to ask you one follow-up question. Because, you know, you've mentioned your dad a few times, you know. But just to give the people more context, what would you say is, like, growing up and now that you are an adult, and you look back, what are some of, like, the biggest things that you think that your dad was trying to teach you or instill into you?
My dad's, you know, his whole thing is humanity.
Hmm.
Like, be a decent human being. Like, be good, be kind, share, look out for each other.
Hmm.
As a general principle. And then he's real big on his Blackness, you know what I mean? Black people. He had a whole model in his head of what he wanted to do in his life with everything that he did. My dad always say that he went to school for, he didn't just go for himself, he went for his hood and his homies. He went to go bring it back and give it to me and my homies.
Mm.
And that's what we've been able to do. And so he's like, I did it. Like, you can't tell him nothing. He on top of the world. Because like, And it's crazy because, you know, when he came out of Harvard, you know, it's only probably like 5 Black men that came out at that time, literally. I'm talking about like a few of them.
Mm-hmm.
And from the master, from the business program.
Mm-hmm.
And they all went and did, you know, lived in the plush areas, got their families and all that. And then my dad was like, all right, y'all, see y'all in a minute. I'm moving to the hood.
Mm-hmm.
And they was like, bro, you got a Harvard MBA, like, you tripping, Louie. Like, mm-hmm. Tripping Big Lou. Like, all right, I'll see you later. Good luck down there, bro. Like, mm-hmm. You know what I mean? My dad was like, yeah, no, good luck to y'all.
Hmm.
And so 30 years now removed from that, he did that. He was class of 84 or something like that. And his parents calling him like, man, I just seen your son on the news. Not because I, rest in peace.
Hmm.
They see me on CNN crying my face off, talking about I got gang members voting.
Hmm.
With my Compton Cowboy shirt on.
Hmm.
You know what I'm saying? And they hearing about me, every little thing that we doing, they hearing about me. And they hearing about me, and they calling my dad like, man, I see what you was doing. I see why you did what you did. Mind you, they kids is all grew up well, established and all that, went to good schools, went off and developed their own family. So they all like, man, I don't even see my kids, bro. Like, they got their own family, they got their degrees, they got their jobs, they traveling around, and me and the wife or whoever, we just at the house.
Hmm.
And it's lonely, and you know what I'm saying? And you know what I'm saying? Yeah, we made some money. Yeah, we did. But what was it for? Like,
hmm.
And so he's like, that's what I was trying to tell you guys, but I appreciate y'all calling me and letting me know that you see what I'm doing, because my dad moved with purpose.
Hmm.
And so it brings him great joy. And he's like, you can't tell him nothing. He's 63 right now, or what am I, 31, 63? And he like, man, if I went today, I lived a good life and I achieved mine. Like I changed, I did something for my people. I made my kids into stand-up young men. Hmm. They changed, they influencing their homies. They doing something positive for the world. I'm good, bro. And so I look up to my dad a lot, and that's why I'm instilling into my two kids now, and just all of our kids and the little homies in the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Definitely. Well, shouts out to your dad, and
shout out to my dad.
Yeah. Shouts out Louie, to Pops.
Big Lou.
So let the people know where they can find you, and also where they can stream your EP.
Randy Savvy. I'm at randysavvy.com. Just my website. You can go there for anything related to the music. You can get, you know, a little more information on me and what I'm on. Our main website for the crew is ComptonCowboys.com. You can follow us on Instagram or any social media at Compton Cowboys. You can follow me on Instagram at Randy Savvy. And you can just go from there. Just explore. Explore everything you see on there because it's a lot going on. But it's all intentional and it's all with purpose. So check it out.
Definitely. So yeah, the EP is called Late Night Ride, and yeah, check out the visual to his single Colorblind. And yeah, thanks for your time.
Thank you. Slauson Girl, appreciate you.
No doubt.
Like this episode?
Leave a review and stay up to date on new episodes by subscribing to Slauson Girl Speaks and follow Slauson Girl on Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook.